The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Well, hello, my friends. It has been way too long since we last connected, but I am so happy to be back in your ears once again with the third season of The Undercurrent. As always, I am your host, Tara Sloan. For those of you who might follow me on social media, some of you may be surprised to hear that we've embarked on another season. You see, in June, I made the move back to my native country, Canada, for personal and family reasons. But there was no part of me that wanted to leave the Sharks behind, and thankfully, they felt the same way. So we are back with The Undercurrent. I am happy to report I will also be back and forth to the Bay Area a whole bunch this season. So you'll see me ringside at some games, and our community stories will continue to be told with another season of Making Waves. So this is all great news, but enough about me. Let's get on with the show. My first guest of the season is blazing new ground in the world of hockey, and it's a great big deal. Truly. Dante Abercrombie has been making his way up the coaching ranks over the past 7 or 8 years, becoming one of only four Black coaches in NCAA hockey when he was hired as an assistant at Stevenson University in 2019. In 2022, he landed a job in player development with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And in 2023, when Tennessee State University announced it would become the first historically Black college or university to ice an NCAA hockey team, it was Dante they named as their head coach. This is a man who is making an impact, and he is thinking big. Here is Dante Abercrombie. So let's just jump right in. First of all, Dante, you and I are talking, and you're in a hotel room, and you said, I'm in a hotel room as always. Where are you right now?
I'm actually in Idaho Falls, Idaho. I'm here for the NCDC West Showcase. The first game just ended. Came back to the hotel to do the call, and I'll be back in time for the second game. So it's perfect timing.
Okay. So, you know, I really want to know all about your personal path, but before we get to that, I mean, what's going on with TSU? What's going on with the program and what's happening right now?
Well, the program is right now we're recruiting. We've already built our schedule for next year. Everything, obviously contracts still need to be signed, but we've already met our 20 game NCAA requirement to be eligible for the national championship, which is really good. And we're already close to about 30 games NCAA. So it's phenomenal what we've been able to accomplish. And now it's just building the team. We have contacts out with a ton of players at this point in time. We have a few that have already committed to us. But now it's just about making sure that the fit is right, not only for the student athlete, but also for us as an institution.
And have you assembled your coaching staff? Is everybody in place?
Nope. As of right now, it's pretty much just me wearing all of the hats. We have Nick Guerrero, who has also been extremely important to not only just the program as it stands, but just getting the program off the ground. He's our director of comms for our athletic department, and he's also director of hockey ops as well.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, we'll talk about how meaningful this is in a little bit, but I want to talk about you. Your mom got you on the ice, which I guess growing up in the Washington, D.C. area was not a normal pastime for a young Black kid. Why did she want to get you skating?
It was just something about being different. That's what she's always preached. She had me when she was a freshman at West Virginia University, obviously left West Virginia University and then went to Howard University to be an OT. So while she was at Howard, I'm a young child and I was almost like a little guinea pig. So whenever she had to do projects for school or they had a co-op or some type of cooperative learning moment, I was there. We have video of myself and my other cousin walking on balance beams and taking a shoe from one place to the other place. So just figuring out how to put us in something different and stretch our imaginations is something that she started when we were extremely young. It was violin lessons and then swimming classes, and learn to skate was just another avenue. She saw what was happening in Washington, D.C. People can remember Washington, D.C. in the late 80s, early 90s. It was given the title murder capital because of the drug scene and just the amount of homicides in the city. She didn't want that for me growing up. So she just wanted to put me in spaces as far away as possible, but also that gave me things to do, just different outlets.
In an article in the Washington Post, they spoke to her and said that she wanted to keep you from the fate of your father. Is it okay to ask about that and what that means?
Absolutely. My dad and I have a great relationship now. And if it wasn't for hockey, we wouldn't know each other. We didn't get to know each other until a mentor of mine, Graeme Townsend, asked, "Hey, Dante, do you have Jamaican blood so you could possibly play for the Jamaican hockey team?" And this is a man I'd only met twice at this point, my father. And I called him and we had the conversation. But if it wasn't for hockey, I would have never had that call and conversation. And now he gets to be a grandfather. But yeah, he went down a road when he was young, and we can say young and dumb, and just if all you know is the street, then that's the direction you tend to go. So he got in a lot of trouble. My mom said, at this point in time, I can't have him around my son. It's not that I don't love him. It's not that I don't want him to have a father figure around, but that's not the example that I want for my son. So hats off to my mom at 19 and a half, 20 years old, to be able to make that type of decision. You're already a teenage mother. You don't have a bachelor's degree, and many people would write you off. And now you're intentionally separating yourself and your son from, you know, at that point in time, the love of her life and the mm-hmm. father of your child.
I saw a picture of the two of you, and I have to say, first of all, I mean, she looks fantastic. She's a beautiful woman, but you guys look exactly alike.
She's practically my twin.
It's uncanny.
We are 19 and a half years apart, but we look as though we could be twins. It's phenomenal. Still to this day, too.
Incredible. I'll make sure I post that so that our listeners understand what I'm talking about. Okay, so you find yourself on the ice. What was it about skating that you gravitated towards?
I think at that age, I started at five and a half, maybe 6 years old. It's just something that you're doing. Like, you don't know whether it's supposed to be for Black or not for Black, traditional sport, non-traditional sport. This was just something else that my mom had me trying. Another thing that she had me try was gymnastics. And that was something that was fun too. So this was just something that felt good. The speed, the cold of the ice rink, the joy of the people that were around us. It was, I don't know, something about it just drew me in. And it drew me in to the point where, you know, it takes a while to get a kid's skates off after the skating session. And I'm walking around peeking over the glass and I see a hockey game. And then that's when it's, "Mom, I want to try that." And her, again, just trying to put me in spaces that traditionally inner city Black youth don't operate in. She's walked me up to the front desk and said, "Hey, he wants to try hockey. How do we do it?" And then they point us in the direction of Neil Henderson and the four DuPont Cannons. So yeah, it's funny how the world works.
Well, and I mean, this is a program that you said has literally saved your life. And I know Neil has remained one of the greatest mentors of your life. So first of all, tell me a little bit about Neil Henderson.
I always almost get choked up when I talk about Neil Henderson. I don't know what my life would have been without Neil Henderson. I know that I have a very strong family around me, a very great support system, high on education, high on success, high on being a good person. So I know I would have been fine, but I don't know if I would be in the seat that I'm currently in. I know for a fact, actually, I wouldn't be in the seat that I'm currently in without Neil Henderson and his example. From the very first day I met him until a couple of days ago when I called him, and I'll let you know why I called him at the end of this little spiel. He's always been so loving. He's always been so open-armed and meet you with a hug, because for a lot of people that grow up in the type of situations that we grew up in Washington, D.C. And my situation wasn't bad at all. Like I say, my mom went to college, had her degree, eventually bought a house. Like, we were doing okay. But a lot of the individuals on that team, dodging bullets on the way, getting robbed on the way to or away from, no parents at home, you know, Coach Neil is picking them up and driving them there. Just the example of how to be a phenomenal human being, but to me, a phenomenal Black man in the game of ice hockey was something that I'll take with me forever. And it's to the point where he is like a second father to me. We just had our son, Dominic Abercrombie, and his middle name is Neil, for Coach Neil. And when I called Coach Neil, he cried on the phone. He's a man that doesn't cry often, but I've been able to get him to cry quite a few times. And this was one that truly hit home. I said, Coach, you mean so much to me that my son will have your name with him forever. So yeah, that was a phenomenal moment.
Wow. That's very touching. How old is Neil now?
I have no idea how old Coach Neil is. I'm not even going to ask him. I know he's not 100 yet and he's older than I am. So,
okay. So, I mean, he's in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, the first Black man, I believe, to be inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. He's a legend in the sport, and you were fortunate enough to have him shepherd you along. When did you decide that hockey, you know, was to be your path? Because you eventually ended up, you know, playing hockey in high school, and then it's become your life.
It was something that I just had always gravitated towards. It had always felt like mine. Like this was something that I just gravitated towards. I was naturally good at it. The speed, I love going fast. The team that I played on for DuPont Cannons, I was one of the better players. I scored almost at will at a young age. And it was just something that I absolutely love. But I think once I got to high school, I had already built a love for hockey without the racial, like you say, the backstory and all of those different things. So when I reached high school, it's like, hey, I'm just as good as everybody else. And even though the eyes were on me, some of them probably in a negative way, it didn't bother me one bit. This is my sport just as much as it is everybody else's. And I'm going to go out there and I'm going to compete and I'm going to try to win championships, which we ended up doing. So that's when I really decided that it was for me. But as far as a career, I had a teammate, Patrick Cullen. He was a few years younger than I was. He ended up going off to play at RPI. We had four players actually play Division I college hockey off of one team in Washington, D.C., which is unheard of. Mm-hmm. But he ended up playing there, and he got invited to the Capitals development camp. And I went out to watch him, and he was playing on a line with Evgeny Kuznetsov. And I'm just sitting there, like, this is my teammate. This is someone that I grew up with, I played with, you know, road trips, all these different things. If he can make it to this point in hockey, there's no reason why I can't as well. So it was really that point where I said, I'm going to devote a few years of my life to training and just see what it is that I can do in this game. And I did. I tried out for the Toledo Walleye year after year after year, got cut numerous times. The coach kept saying, Dante, you're close. It's not like you're far off. It's just you haven't played recently, so you need to find a place to play. So New Zealand and all these other different things happen. And the journey has been unreal. Like it's I when I sit and look back, I'm like, one, how did you even make these decisions, Dante? Like what kind of guts did you have or lack thereof to go out and really go to New Zealand where you knew nobody because a coach said that you just needed to play somewhere in the world? Okay, I'm just going to pick up and go to New Zealand. You come back, the lockout happens right as you had an opportunity to play in Elmira, so you go to the Washington Capitals and knock on the glass and they let you on the ice and they try you out for 5 minutes and they ask you, yeah, to stay and train with them during the lockout. And then that turns into the first pro opportunity. And then that turned into meeting Graham Townsend, who's like a second father. It's just been happening in order. And that's why I try to make sure that everything I do is within as much decency as possible, because I have to take care of this opportunity. This opportunity isn't just for me. This is for everybody that's coming behind me and for all the people that have helped me get to this point in my past.
So, well, first of all, tell me a little bit more about Graham. He's the first Jamaican-born hockey player to compete in the NHL. He's a name that I think is known around Toronto, where I live, as heading up Team Jamaica. But tell me how you met him and how your relationship has evolved.
So Graham Townsend, that's a wow. So I'm in Toronto. I did a GoFundMe to go up and train at Twist Whitby. And somebody calls, this is a Jamaican conversation. Somebody calls and says, hey, Dante, you know, you're a Black hockey player. Duh. Do you think you have Jamaican blood? Team Jamaica's doing a tryout this weekend. I have no idea, but I'll still come to the tryout just in case I do. So I go to the tryout, and Graham Townsend and Cyril Bowlers are the ones that are running it. And just, I'm in awe that this individual played in the National Hockey League, coached in the National Hockey League, looked like me. I didn't know his background at that point in time, but I was like, this is somebody I need to glean information off of. So during the week or the weekend, I'm having a couple conversations back and forth. And then comes time for the event to be over. And these are all Black individuals on the ice. So the sense of family is now being broken apart because we all have to go our separate ways. And I'm standing at the front door needing a ride back to Whitby because the trains had closed down already. He walks past and somebody just whispers, "Hey, Graham, is there any way that you could take Dante back to Whitby? Because he's kind of stranded right now." He says, "Absolutely. I could have gone down the Buffalo way, but I'll just go the Montreal way over top to go back to Maine." So I jump in his car, and that was the best ride I've ever had in my life. He took me to his favorite eatery when he was growing up, a diner. And we sat there and we had breakfast and we talked for probably an hour or 2 hours. And I told him about my GoFundMe and training in Twist and all these other different things. He said, "I could donate to your cause, or I could have you come and work for me next summer. I'll teach you everything I know about the business of hockey and how to build a hockey school and how to coach. So when you're finished playing someday, hopefully long down the line, you'll have something to fall back on in this game if you so choose." And in the moment, I'm like, "Oh, I really could have used an extra $100 or $200 or whatever it was." But then it clicked that he's just trying to give what somebody had given him. And then we get in the car and we start heading to Whitby and we stop past where he grew up. And I see his neighborhood and I'm like, "Wow, this looks just like where I grew up." And then he starts to tell me stories about the projects and doing workouts on his balcony and having to walk back and forth, paying for his own equipment. I'm like, he lived the life that I grew up in. He made it out doing exactly what it was that I was trying to do, finding a way to be successful. And we've been connected ever since. He's the first person that told me I should coach. That first summer I worked with him, I was, it was the Chowder Cup. And after one of the games, he looks over at me. He was like, "Dante, I've been around some Hall of Fame coaches, some absolute legends in this game. You'll learn the X's and O's. But as far as your people skills and the way you communicate and just your love for people and their development, he was like, you're going to get to the National Hockey League someday. I know it. So mm-hmm. you might want to try coaching once you're finished playing." And that was it. Somebody looks like you from where you're from, tells you something like that, you believe them.
Wow. That's an unbelievable story. No, it's not unbelievable. It's believable. It's just beautiful. And I mean, in terms of, you know, your people skills, obviously Neil Henderson mentoring you all the way through. Had you even contemplated coaching before that, or did Graham really put that in your brain?
So I had already started coaching. I had gone back to my high school and was a high school coach there for a little bit, assistant coach on the varsity team. But again, this was just early 20s, trying to figure out life, what direction you're going to go, career path, all this stuff, or other different things. And then that's when I got the itch to want to play again, was coaching the team. So now I'm thinking coaching is just a side thing, but I'm playing. But Graham was the first one that mentioned the National Hockey League. And I had a, I don't think at that point, but I eventually came up with the slogan NHL Bound. And it came from those type of conversations that that's where I want to get to. And it didn't happen as a player, but it sure did happen as a coach. And that's, I still pinch myself. I actually just text Sheldon this morning back. We went back and forth on something, just thinking about him. I'm so grateful for that opportunity.
Okay. So, well, get us to that point then. So your coaching journey really officially begins in earnest. So what happens?
So the coaching journey, yes, it happens with Graham Townsend and in that conversation. But it really was when my wife and I got pregnant with our first child, Patrick, and it happened in September. I had been training all summer, had just worked on a PTO with the South Carolina Stingrays. Ryan Rosofsky was actually the head coach, and I got a chance to see him last year in San Jose. Long story, we won't even get into it, but.
No, I want to get into that in a little bit.
Yeah, eventually, yeah. So we'll table that. We'll come back to that. But the that was what was on the table. And I get an email from him, "Hey, we're going to Alaska for our training camp. So we can't really afford to take everybody. If you're able to bring yourself up, obviously we want to still try to go down this route of the PTO because Barry Trotz has spoken so highly of you." At the same time, pregnant with my son, like we just found out. So it's, you're weighing go out and chase your dream at soon to be 30 years old, or be a father to a son and a husband to a wife that you didn't have growing up. So you're juggling, but it wasn't really a hard decision to make. It's like, I'm definitely going to go after the family. And a couple of months later, one of my best friends, intern John, he's a radio personality in the DC area. Literally, he married my wife and I. That we're that close of friends. He was like, hey, we've always said if we get a chance to coach together, let's coach together. A prep school just opened up. And that was the first time I really started coaching without playing being a part of my life. And that was in 2016. It wasn't that long ago. That was the first time I truly stepped on the bench as a quote unquote professional coach. And it went from that to the Washington Little Caps U16, Little Caps U18, Stevenson University at the same time, Georgetown Prep also still at the same time. The opportunities with Arizona that turned into an opportunity with Boston that, you know, almost landed me a job with the National Team Development Program, literally the runner up. And I got the call from Dan Muse that I didn't get that job on the day that the Leafs opportunity closed. So I had to get my application in within a span of probably 4 or 5 hours. And I got it in before the deadline. And 6 to 8 interviews later, I get the call again from Sheldon Keefe. Dante, you're the guy. You're the one that we want. Congratulations. You're going to be the coaching development associate for 22-23. And I had just picked up my son, Patrick, and he got a chance to experience that call. And it was a call that changed my life. Absolutely changed my life.
So tell me about that time and working with Sheldon.
It was a dream come true. And I say that not as the glitz of Toronto and all these other different things. It was great. Like, you walk in and you need for absolutely nothing. You know, you got the logo on your plates when you're sitting down eating. Like, you know, you're a Leaf from day one. But I didn't know what that opportunity was meant to be until my first day. I didn't know whether it was a, you know, sit on the side, fly on the wall for a year, take notes all year, and then go out and take what you've learned and apply it to your career. From day one, there were conversations about trades and player movement and structured details and practice and all of it. And I'm at the table, not just to the side, at the table, allowed to speak on these instances. Obviously, you have to pick your spots, but allowed to speak whenever I felt necessary on these instances. And just the confidence that it builds in working with a Mitch or an Austin or Nylander or Nick Robertson, like, great relationship with Robbie, because he was with the Marlies and then the Leafs and then got injured and then had to work through that, and just texting back and forth and making sure he was okay. And now he has his new contract and, you know, scoring goals, and, you know, glad Willie's okay, but he's trying to do whatever he can for the team and even pushing players up the ice. But that level of confidence allows you to see that you can achieve anything in this game and you are capable of coaching at the highest level. So take that with you and run with it. Kyle Dubas, Brendan Shanahan, Sheldon Keefe, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Who did you talk to, Sheldon today or Kyle today, you said?
Sheldon. I actually was texting back and forth with Kyle last week and a half ago at the USHL event in Pittsburgh. I see him across the way. I shoot him a quick text. He smiles, lights up. He's another phenomenal human being. He's one of the best people that keeps in contact in the right way with people. Like, he just feeds information to the people that are the closest to him, whether that's a book quote, whether that's a podcast. Hey, thought about you when I heard this. Boom. Like, that's Kyle. That's the reason he's so great at what he does.
So when that contract ended with the Leafs, I mean, were you even – like, what did you decide that your goal was? Was it, I mean, now you want to get your name on the Stanley Cup eventually. Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Like, no question.
Well, that's even a, okay, you ready for this one?
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, Dante, you are nuts to say that. But you know what? A lot of people would have said I was nuts to be able to make it out of the situation I was to a place in Toronto where I had the key to Scotiabank and can go in there any day, all day, run the stairs, any time of day. I want to win 16 Stanley Cups, and I want to win 4 as a coach, 4 as a GM, 4 as a president, and 4 as an owner. And I feel as though having that type of a goal forces me to have to operate in a certain way for the next 60 some odd years of my life. Hopefully my great grandfather got to 103. Hopefully I get to 90 or 100. But I think if that is something I'm shooting for, I take care of the relationships. I try to make sure that everything's done. Even this opportunity at Tennessee State, even though it's NCAA and it's not the National Hockey League, this is extremely important to hockey in general. So I had to come, as long as they wanted to have me, I had to come and make sure this was done as best as I possibly could. And I'm not saying I'm leaving in a year or two. That's absolutely not the case. I will be here for as long as it takes for us to be a national championship contender. But then I do have goals for my life. And that's, 16 Stanley Cups.
I love that so much. I mean, I feel like that's a lesson I can learn, is like just allowing myself to dream huge, you know, because why not? And
why not?
And for you, you're on the right track. So might as well stick with it. And before we get to TSU and the impact of that and the importance of that, let's just talk about the Sharks a little bit, because you do have a connection with the team. You were there, I guess, during camp in 2023.
Yes.
So, I mean, first of all, Mike Greer, the only Black general manager in the NHL. I mean, that's meaningful. How did that strike you when he was hired?
Well, I'm blessed to have two GMs in the NHL that I'm friends with, Brett Peterson as an assistant GM in Florida, and then Mike Greer as VGM in San Jose. And they've both been phenomenal. And Mike even, had reached out before when I was heading into the Leafs. It was like, hey, if you're ever in need of anything, let me know. If you'd like to come out to training camp, we'd love to have you out. So obviously signing with the Leafs, put that on the back burner. But then the following year, he said, yes, if you don't have anything, please come out, come learn from our staff. And that's what I did. I came out, I saw the way a different staff operated. I got to see him operate as the person sitting at the front of the table, having to make decisions, and just the way he delegated and the way he operated in that room was extremely empowering. And just people that I met, Tim Burke and Ned Colletti, and then obviously the entire coaching staff I've stayed in touch with that was in place then. And then obviously the one that's in place now, knowing the head coach very well also, has been unreal, really good. So, all right, I guess I'll talk about
tell me about Ryan.
So I walk in and I sit down, I'm starting to meet people, going around shaking hands, and it's like, oh, nice to meet you, Dante Abercrombie. Nice to meet you, Dante Abercrombie. He's looking over, he's like, we know each other, don't we? I was like, I had to give the puzzled look, like, I'm not sure, but I know. I walk in, I see his nameplate right above him, and I've done my research and I remember the people I've run into in the past. He was like, you were supposed to possibly play for us in South Carolina, but something happened with logistics and we weren't able to make that happen. And again, you almost kind of want to choke up. It's like you have that. You don't know the impact that you have on people. You don't know how memorable you actually are until you have a chance to have that conversation with them. And it's brought up something that happened at that point, 6, 7 years, or probably 8 years before that. He still remembers and can bring it back to thought like that. Like, that's just next level. But we had some great laughs, sat in the sauna, talked about life and just moving out to San Jose. And then I saw him again at the draft right after he was announced as the head coach, and got the chance to congratulate him. And then Spencer Carver was sitting right next to me. So there's two young individuals that are fresh in the game that I count as friends. It warms your heart to see good people have good things happen to them. So I know the Sharks organization is in a phenomenal place. I thought Dave Quinn did a great job with what he had to deal with of getting the program or the organization to this point. And I think Ryan's going to do a great job of taking it from this point into the future. So hats off to everybody in the Sharks organization. They've been nothing but great to me.
Yeah.
And they hired a really good friend of mine, Jaron Burke, as a scout. So also a Maple Leafs alum.
And I love working for them. That's why, even though I moved back to Toronto, I still really wanted to be a part of the organization, because I really, I believe in them. I think they're, their hearts are in the right place. And so I agree with everything you say. So let's get to you becoming the head coach of an NCAA team. Was that even on your radar when this was brought to you?
Not one bit.
No.
I was in Toronto or in Nashville when they made the announcement, because I was there for the draft with the Leafs. And I said, this is phenomenal. HBCU, obviously I have the HBCU lineage with my mom and myself and my wife and cousins and aunts, everybody. In my family, it seems. I was like, this is exactly what I wanted as a child. And then when I got the call from Nick Guerrero in December, I was actually at this event that took place in December last year. So that's why this event means so much to me too. I said, this is absolutely what needs to happen. This is something that would definitely bring me into college hockey. I had been a college coach at the D3 level, more as a hockey assistant, not necessarily on the recruiting side or the head coaching side, but focused primarily on the hockey tasks of the day. And I never really looked at college hockey as a route for me because of some of the, and I'm not going to say all of the individuals because that's not true, but some of the individuals that I had run into seemed very conservative in a wrong way, very traditionalist and very against the way the game is going, the way society is going, and the way these student athletes are going, and the people that they are. And I didn't like the way they were salesmen in all of the conversations that I had. I said, why are we using education as a means to build your personal cachet, your brand? I was like, that just doesn't sit well with me. As long as you are giving, then I'm okay with it. But if you're just using these individuals, I had a problem with it. And I'm not saying that's the case at the D1 level, but I did see some of that on the recruiting trail at some of the lower levels of collegiate hockey. But when I got the call, I said, this has to be done, and this has to be done right, because the world hasn't seen an HBCU in the hockey space, the band, the Divine Nine, the tailgates, just the fan support and the way hockey can be played with a little bit more swagger. Like, that's just, hockey's been waiting to breathe and burst free. And that's what TSU hockey hopefully is going to bring to the hockey landscape. And everybody behind the scenes is excited about it, extremely excited about it.
I mean, in the greater hockey universe, what does this mean? I mean, you grew up, you didn't see this as a kid. What's it like for a young Black youth, in America, who's like, oh, wait, not only can I, are they starting to see themselves reflected at all levels of hockey, but, they can play through college in a place that feels good to them.
And that's the beauty of this. I've always said that this isn't an all Black team. This is I think it's even bigger than that. This is an HBCU understanding that hockey is important as an offering on its campus. And that's just like having AI, having any type of computer science, having pre-med, having, like, we have a great agriculture program. Having all these different offerings helps to diversify your campus, and honestly helps to enrich the educational opportunities of the individuals that choose to go there. Same thing is with your sports offerings. Having hockey introduces them to something that is different than where they came from, potentially, or it could be familiar. You never know. But just like me growing up, trying hockey changed my life. Going to a predominantly white prep school also changed my life. I got a chance to meet people that left their house and their car doors unlocked for the first time. I was like, wait, are you not where I grow up? Absolutely not. You would walk out and you'd be lucky if your car's still there. But if it is still there, there's nothing in it. I guarantee you.
Right.
But this was the exposure, the tangible experience that I needed to see that there is different ways of living. And there may be a student coming to Tennessee State that has never experienced hockey. And guess what? They're going to get a chance to not only go to our games, but more importantly, sit in classes and eat lunch and travel back and forth with these student athletes and learn about them. And when they talk about the NCAA, the NCAA now gets to learn about HBCUs in the hockey space. Denver, BU, Penn State, Merrimack, Arizona State, like all of these schools, most of their students more than likely have never experienced an HBCU before. So we're just opening everybody's eyes. And that's, I think that's the beauty of this to me. This is helping to, honestly, to bridge the gap and make the world a better place just through hockey. So that's why I want to say overwhelmed. I'm so overwhelmed with joy that this is actually happening. My wife looked at me right when I got the call. She says, you have to do this. We want to move to Nashville. We want to have a chance to, you know, live somewhere else. But Dante, this is you. All of the steps have taken you to this point. Everything matters to this right here.
Wow. I mean, it's giving me shivers, you know.
It's never been done before.
Yeah,
and that's the beauty of it.
So is it guaranteed? And now that this is where I'm literally asking you, because I don't quite understand how it works. Is it guaranteed that you enter at a D1 level? Is that how, next season,
25-26, the first game, I would love to announce it here, but I can't just because the contract hasn't been signed yet.
Right.
But it's a very, very, very prominent team in NCAA Division I college hockey. And that will be our very first game. And like I say, we already are over our 20 game count. We're close to 30 games. We are locked and loaded and ready to play. Now it's just obviously getting the players. But there's a lot on the hook, and there's going to be even more, because trust me, once, not just that game, that's going to be the big one. But once the schedule is announced and we start to leak some information, legally, not illegally, but once we start some information out there, there's going to be a lot of people that want to come and play at Tennessee State. Because when I talk to them on the phone, they're like, oh, so where in Tennessee are you? We are 7 minutes from Broadway. It depends on traffic, 7 to 9 minutes.
Is that a good or a bad thing for a student?
I think it's a beautiful thing. There's so much to do on Broadway. There's so much great music and there's awesome museums. I don't see any way a student athlete would ever get in any type of trouble on Broadway. There's a great river that runs through there. But as we all know, college is about growing up and learning about yourself and making mistakes and being allowed to make mistakes and build and grow from it. I think no better place than Nashville to help teach those lessons.
I might have made a mistake or two in Nashville.
Like I say, I was there for the draft, and I know for a fact, I just walked around, but all the different bars and venues were full of people. But again, it's just the life and the joy, and it's just a great place. It feels like home.
It's such a beautifully rich place, culturally. Now, maybe I'm not sure how much you know about this. And I, as a Canadian, you know, I'm still trying to wrap my head around Title IX and what that means. So are there obligations for TSU to eventually ice a women's hockey team as well? Or
so the goal is to have a women's ice team in the future. And that was one of the things that I brought up, because I know it had been brought up in press clippings before, but I was like, on the women's side as well, this needs to happen, not only with the players, but there's coaches that are able to coach at this level that are doing phenomenal jobs where they currently are. So that's something that I absolutely would love to see happen. I don't know, obviously I don't sit at those tables, but just to my knowledge, I don't know if we are connected through Title IX. I think there has already been a plan that's been put out that connects us with another women's sport potentially coming to the school, or not potentially, but coming to the school as a part of our rollout.
Right.
But they wouldn't come for another year. That's just the way it was written to the NCAA and the OBC and all those different people.
Okay. Well.
But certainly... I'm an absolute supporter of having a women's program as well.
Because wouldn't that be wonderful?
It needs to happen. Mm-hmm. It needs to happen.
Well, I am so buoyed by your conversation today, because your energy is contagious, and it's also just, you know, it's so obvious to me how important your presence in the hockey world is. So I don't know if I'll, you know, be around for all of your 16 Stanley Cup championships, but I certainly hope to see as many of them as possible. But for now, also, I want you to get an NCAA title or two or something.
Yeah, well, it starts with the NCAA, and that's one thing that I'm big on, and I don't mind this being out there. I've told this to recruits. Our room isn't finished, hasn't even been built or anything like that yet, but I'm going to have two championship trophies in our facility. The first one is going to be in my office, and it's going to be hanging, and I want to make sure I see it every single day, because that's what championship culture, championship mindset, championship operation, like, that's the way I want to operate every single day. And the other one's going to be in the players lounge. I don't necessarily want them focused on it while they're getting ready to play. That's why it's not going to be in the locker room, but in their lounge, when they walk in and when they walk out, this is what we are about. This is why you are here. Mm-hmm. You are here to help build this. You are here because you have said that you want to be a part of a championship team, and that's up to you. So are you living in a championship way, or are you not? And if you're not, guess what? You have an opportunity to get back in line with where it is we're trying to go, but they need to see it. I need to see it. Because there's one thing to talk about it, but there's another thing to see it every single day. Mm. And I think that'll help us get there. And it's the reason, like, all the donations and everything, which have been great to this point, you know, shameless plug, tsutigers.com/hockey/donate. That really helps us not only just stay afloat, but it really helps to elevate what it is that we are trying to do. So if anybody would like to donate, I would absolutely love it. But yeah, this is so much bigger than Dante Abercrombie. Honestly, it's bigger than TSU. This is showing that hockey has reached places that people never thought. Hockey is important to people that traditionally have been left out of this sport. And now it's time for hockey to be done our way. And that's not a racial statement. That is, Michigan State does hockey their way. BU does hockey their way. TSU, we do hockey our way. So this has been an absolute pleasure. You're kind of a legend too. So this is cool.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you. I don't see it that way, but I'm truly inspired by you, and you're changing the world. So thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Just a huge thanks to Dante. That was such a great conversation. And, you know, anytime you catch somebody in a hotel room, you know they're doing this on the fly in between many other things. So Dante, thank you. Thank you for your time. And, you know, I meant what I said. I love his outlook. 16 Stanley Cups. Dream big. Why not? What do you have to lose? And I love his mindset. So I hope, Dante, that I run into you many times throughout both of our hockey journeys. To all of you out there, thank you so much for listening. This is, like I said, this is the first of many episodes to come this season. So really excited to get back in the saddle. And some of you, I'm looking forward to seeing you at the Tank, because I will be there very soon. I'll be there for the home opener and the game after that. And I'm there pretty much once a month for a home stand here and there. So really glad to be back with the team. Really glad to be back with you. And we'll be back with another episode in a couple of weeks on The Undercurrent. In the meantime, you know what I'm going to say. Keep your fins above water.